and approving and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 married couples. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
Homage to the Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. In my talk yesterday, I mixed a couple metaphors. One of the snow blade, vehicle with a snow blade, and the other one a tightrope walker. And if we leave the snow blade behind for a moment and stick with the tightrope walker, I was talking about the walking of the razor's edge. And of course I was trying to express, I don't know if it came across very clearly, that the impossibility of living and training without perceptual wobbles, the fact that being human we're going to have our wobbles. And I thought I'd like to expand on this a little bit in a very traditional way, especially for the Zen schools, looking back to a key event in the history of Zen and the history of Buddhism, which event may be real history and it may be somewhat made up. But it doesn't really matter because it's a very good teaching. But I'm thinking of the famous poems written by the fifth Chinese patriarch's disciple, a chief disciple, and then by Wei Ning in response to that, who became the sixth patriarch, in response to that poem of the chief disciple of the fifth patriarch. If you recall the story, and again, it's there's no way of knowing. Over, you know, well over 1,000 years later, whether this was a actual event that happened as described in the Platform Sutra, or whether this is a somewhat fictional. But it's I think it's so famous because there's great teaching in it. So anyway, according to the story, the fifth patriarch was old and approaching the end of his life, and he gathered together his disciples and told them that he would name the sixth patriarch, his successor, the person to be abbot after his death, and to receive the patriarchal robe and bowl. And he would give the robe and bowl to the monk who gave the best poem. And he indicated a wall that they could write the poem on. So initially only the chief disciple had the nerve to put a poem up. And it's a very good poem. And then a lay person working in the kitchen, who'd been there just 2 years, if I remember correctly, a very young man named Wei Ning, had the gall, some might say, or the courage, to write a poem beneath the chief disciple's poem. And the story is that the patriarch gave the robe and bowl to a lay trainee at the time, Wei Ning, because his poem trumped the chief disciple's poem. So the chief disciple's poem was, if I remember it correctly, "The body is the Bodhi tree, the mind the mirror bright." carefully we clean them hour by hour and allow no dust to alight. And Weening's famous poem in response was, "The body is not a Bodhi tree, the mind is not a mirror bright. Since there is nothing from the first, where can the dust alight?" And all of us who are Rinpoche Master's disciples will remember the many times that Rinpoche Master used that expression, "Since there is nothing from the first." The funny thing is, if you think about that first poem, there's nothing whatsoever wrong with it. I'll repeat it again. The body is a Bodhi tree, the mind a mirror bright. Carefully we clean them hour by hour and let no dust alight. If you think about it for a moment, you know, what's wrong with that? And I think, if I remember correctly, according to the story, the other monks were in awe of that poem and were sure that, you know, no one had the nerve to challenge that expression of understanding, except this one person, this lay person, who seemed to negate entirely what the other poem was saying. Well, appearances are misleading. If you go and actually read the Platform Sutra, which, of course, I've talked about this story before many times, and the Platform Sutra is one of my favorite scriptures, and I've used it a lot in teaching and in my own personal, you know, practice. It's also known as the Sutra, the Scripture of the Sixth Patriarch. The Scripture of the Teachings of the Sixth Patriarch. The Platform refers to the patriarch's giving teaching from a raised platform, which was traditional. Anyway, if we think for a moment, you know, what could possibly be lacking in that poem of the chief disciples? The body is a Bodhi tree, the mind a mirror bright. Well, what does Dogen say? This, our mind and body, deserve to be treated with deep respect, for they are the vehicle of our practice and of our realization of the truth. And of course, if we have faith in and eventually experience of the fact that this mind and body, which is the combined kind of physical and mental processes, are what we call ourselves, really. It's what we are. This has the Buddha nature. Then certainly it's not inappropriate to say that it's the Bodhi tree. The tree under which the Buddha was enlightened is a Bodhi tree. The body is the Bodhi tree, and the mind is the bright mirror. And you can think of the title of the most excellent mirror, Samadhi, the most excellent mirror, meditation. When I spoke yesterday about the tightrope walker trying to maintain balance while walking that razor's edge, I was thinking very much along these lines. You got to pay attention, close attention to what you're doing to really keep the precepts. And even then one is finding all the time the way one slips. And what is being expressed in that poem? Carefully, we clean them hour by hour, you know, mindfulness, you know, perceptual training, and let no dust alight. So there's nothing wrong with this whatsoever. It's wonderful teaching. However, is there a deeper truth that might be in some way implied by this verse, but is not explicitly stated in it? And I think that's how best to understand the poem of Wei Ning, who became the sixth patriarch. The body is not a Bodhi tree, the mind is not the mirror bright. Well, think here of the scripture of great wisdom. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. No form, no taste, sound, color, touch, or object, etc., etc. What is that saying? It's saying, however real body and mind seem, they are not the true reality of things. There's something more real. It's also saying, remember your master translated the term shunyata as both void and pure, the immaculacy of nothingness. Meaning void of self. There's no enduring self within that we can find within our changing mental and physical experience. This experience is made up of complex processes. There's a flow, constant flow of experience. And they're subject, every aspect of body and mind are subject to change. That's the emptiness. And the purity is that when we really penetrate that emptiness, its meaning fully, we find that this is not just changeableness, it's the life of Buddha, the flowing life of Buddha. And while the elements of the flow come and go, arise and pass, the essential reality is the great immaculacy of the eternal, and that is unchanging. The changeable, the many within the one within the many. So that's the first two lines of Wei Ning's poem. The body is not the Bodhi tree, the mind is not mirror bright. Body and mind, in other words, are not the true reality. There's more to it than that, is what he's saying. He's replaced those two lines with, there's more to it than that. Since there is nothing from the first, or you can put that, rephrase that, put it in a more affirmative rather than the kind of negational expression, so that it says, since all is of the great immaculacy, see, since there is nothing from the first, since all is of the great immaculacy, since all is of the eternal, where can the dust alight? You can change where can the dust alight to there's more to reality than what we think of as dust. Even when we err to any degree whatsoever, even the most grievous error, we are still of the eternal. And this is indeed, when understood this way, this is indeed a deeper expression of truth, but not an expression of truth that stands against the other, but an expression of truth which can be understood to be complementary. It's the truth of the all is one, and the other is the truth of the all is different. And it takes both all is one and all is different. According according to one historian who I read, there was this enormous struggle that went on for a while between what came to be the Northern School that supposedly was, had it, traced its lineage back to the chief disciple of the fifth patriarch, and the Southern School that developed supposedly around Hui Ning, who eventually became ordained 17 years after he became the sixth patriarch. He was in hiding for that period, 17 years, and then eventually came out and revealed himself and got himself ordained, became a monk. Of course, he was already a monk in his heart. But apparently there was quite a little political row between the Northern and Southern schools, and some people think that this whole story was cooked up as a way for the Southern school to one-up doctrinally one-up the Northern school. And eventually the Southern school won out. But of course we're dealing with historical facts that are, many of which are simply not available to us. And many of which are also of a strongly political nature. You know, according to this historian, there was an outright power struggle that happened for a while. And by whatever straight and crooked lines this teaching came down to us, I believe that if it's understood in this complementary rather than opposing way, these two verses together constitute a very complete and adequate teaching. If we think for a moment, you know, what would be life like if one was stuck just with a somewhat literal interpretation of the first poem? If that happened, then we could get so concerned about making a mistake that we could become paralyzed spiritually and become terrified of taking the very real risk that is involved in going into deeper meditation at times. And having to trust something deeper than external forms. If, however, we were to take the second poem in a somewhat narrow-minded way, we could misunderstand it and think it's saying that there is no value to rules, and especially there is no value to the precepts. And that, of course, would be a really big mistake. Now, if you read the Platform Sutra, what you find is that a big part of this little scripture is dedicated to preceptual teaching. The sixth patriarch is not teaching, you know, there is nothing from the first, therefore just do whatever you feel like, you don't have to worry about the law of karma. There's a section in it on contrition. There's a great deal of preceptual teaching. And he talks outright about cleansing the mind and heart. So if we kind of apply this to my what I was saying about our tightrope walker, I think that one way to understand that razor's edge is, and one of the reasons why it is a razor's edge that one has to try to walk in training, one has to walk it in training, is that it does take a constant effort of mindfulness, the perceptual training, to keep from just outright falling off. And when it does fall off, it's really helpful to have the teaching of Sangha, to, so one knows one can do Sangha, sit up straight in the presence of the Buddha, admit, okay, I've made a mistake, get back up on and keep going. Learn from one's experience. On the other hand, it is asking too much of any human being that one will not have one's human wobbles, and sometimes perhaps one's outright fallen off. And we won't ask more than of ourselves or of others than is humanly possible if we remember that there is nothing from the first. In other words, that the true reality is the great immaculacy. The eternal does not sit in judgment of us, is not keeping score on us. If we make a mistake, the important thing is to learn from it and go on and try not to repeat it. To accept the consequences, which can be quite difficult sometimes. And to go on and on in training. Not to give up out of self-judgment, discouragement. In other words, the teaching of immaculacy is a huge help to self-forgiveness. And the experience of immaculacy goes beyond what we could normally think of as self-forgiveness, self-acceptance. It simply is. And it takes care of everything. And then we still have to keep walking that razor's edge.
Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.